for coming here today, everybody. Let's go ahead and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 290. We have a long list of witnesses, probably about 14 or 16 people. Most of them are for, a few of them are against. I'm going to make sure that everybody has a fair shot to give their testimony, but we're not going to let anybody go too long. Because we're going to be out of here at 5 no matter what. So I'll try not to cut anybody off, but on the other hand, we need to keep this moving along. So if we could start with Laura Weiss and Matt Blevins, that would be great.
Chair Ringo, senators, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. I thought I would say a few quick words on this and then turn this over to my colleague, Laura Weiss, who will speak more directly to the bill. I just wanted to clarify for the committee that there are a set of amendments that we've requested that were not done yet for today, that we're going to raise the registration fee from the $160 to the $200 level. That was supposed to be what the level was when we first drafted or intended to draft this. It was a drafter's error originally, so I just wanted to clarify that with the committee. Also wanted to clarify that, according to Ledge Council, even though the language may make it seem like this bill requires individual reporting, household reporting, and sales reporting, that's not the intent of the bill, and that according to Ledge Council, it was clarifying language, so that doesn't actually happen in the bill, even though it may seem like that does. So with that, I'll turn that over to Laura Weiss.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Laura Weiss with the Oregon Environmental Council. Chair and members of the committee, OEC is here to strongly support measures to fully fund and implement Oregon's pesticide use reporting system. 6 years ago, as you know, the legislature voted 88-2 in favor of a pesticide use reporting system. And of course, the purpose of the law was to track the use of pesticides in both urban and rural areas of the state, so that we can better protect water quality and human health. We know that pesticides are widely used throughout Oregon, not only on farms and forests, but also in schools, parks, roadsides, hospitals, golf courses, and our homes and gardens. Today, unfortunately, we're still in the dark about what pesticides are used, where they're used, and how much they're used. As the Oregonian newspaper pointed out in their editorial this Monday, a pesticide use reporting system is needed for a number of reasons, including the following: providing crucial information about pesticide use to health researchers and drinking water providers so that they can help reduce the impact that pesticides might have on our health, to get a better handle on pesticides used around our rivers and streams so that we might prevent future contamination. We know from U.S. geological surveys that 50 different pesticides have been found in the Willamette River Basin. And when the USGS scientists tried to correlate what was found in the river and the streams to pesticide use on the land, they were stymied because of lack of information. And then it will also help regulators avoid worst-case assumptions about pesticide use. And we can look to California, where they've had pesticide use reporting for the last 15 years, and where issues of salmon protection have come up, regulators have imposed smaller buffer zones because they've had data on which to rely. Opponents of this system have told us that we can't afford the program because of the state's budget problems. The amendments to Senate Bill 290 provide the obvious solution to this problem. With these amendments, the bill will fully fund the program by increasing registration fees paid to the state by pesticide manufacturers. The amendments will increase fees from $160 to $200 per product. And by increasing these fees, we can fully fund and implement the program and save general fund dollars for other purposes. The bottom line is that pesticide manufacturers are getting a bargain here in Oregon. This year, those manufacturers paid only $120 per product to register their pesticides in the state. You can compare this to the three states with the highest fees, and I've attached to my testimony a copy of a document that the department put together that shows the different fees in different states. And the highest states charged $750, $600, and $500 per product, as you can see on that chart. And in fact, in 2004, there were 23 states that charged pesticide makers more than the state of Oregon. And even after we would raise the fee to 200, there would be 14 states with the same or higher registration fees. I think it's interesting to compare some of these fees to the profits that pesticide manufacturers earn for the from the sale of their profits in Oregon. Monsanto, for example, which is a major pesticide manufacturer, saw net sales in 2002 that totaled $4.7 billion. That's with a B. So in closing, I wanted to add that pesticide use reporting is going to provide basic information about the use of pesticides in both urban and rural areas of the state. There are well over 9,000 pesticide products registered for use in Oregon, and they pose a range of health and environmental risks. By tracking pesticide use, we would be using a non-regulatory approach to risk reduction. We would have accurate data that would encourage sound science and discourage exaggerations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just had a couple questions. Could you just talk a little bit about the mechanics of how the fee is paid?
How the pesticide registration fee is paid? My understanding
who pays the fee?
My understanding, and I imagine that the department could clarify this, is that the what they're called the registrants, that is the pesticide manufacturers, pay the Department of Agriculture a yearly fee based on the number of products that they register for use in the state. In order to use a pesticide in Oregon, it has to be registered first. And so in order to be registered, you have to pay a fee.
And so is the fee imposed per product?
It is imposed per product.
Okay. Is there, you know, there's this sign-up list. Is there somebody who's going to testify about the specific human health impacts of pesticides?
I believe that you will hear from some folks who are health researchers who understand the need for the data from a health researcher perspective.
Okay. I mean, I've been to seminars where I've heard discussions of enhanced statistically enhanced birth defects if you're close to a farm, even greater if you're on the farm, that kind of thing. Is it? Are we going to hear that kind of testimony?
I can't tell you if you're going to hear that kind of testimony, but I have certainly myself reviewed a number of studies, and there's a plethora of studies out there that link exposure to pesticides, both on the farm and in the home, to a range of health effects, including cancer, birth defects, reproductive problems, neurological problems, and a number of other effects.
Okay. Thank you. Committee, any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. If we could bring up three at a time, please. Andy Harris, Joan Rothlow, and William Lambert. That would be great. I've got to step out for 1 minute, so Senator Atkinson will pass the bill if I'm gone.
Yeah, all right.
We have to close the hearing.
I am Andrew Harris. I'm a Salem physician. Thank you to Chairman Ringo for bringing up the question of toxics in human health. I'm sorry he's not in the room. I served on the 1998 Governor's Task Force on Hazardous Substances and Toxics Right to Know. It was our recommendations from that task force that were used to draft the pesticide tracking bill in 1999. Today, the citizens of Oregon are as vulnerable to the toxic effects of pesticides as they were 6 years ago. Physicians have moved more and more in the direction of preventive medicine, advocating healthy diet, exercise, the avoidance of unhealthy habits, and toxic substances. The preventive medicine model presupposes that doctors and patients are able to track their exposure to agents that can trigger medical problems. Many pesticides are hazardous to human health, especially the health of infants and young children. Many pesticides kill insects because they are neurotoxic. Organophosphates such as Durspan and diazinon inhibit acetylcholine esterase, the enzyme responsible for breaking down the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. Studies have shown that small, single doses of organophosphates on a critical day of development can cause permanent changes in neurotransmitter receptive levels in the brain. Organophosphates decrease DNA synthesis in the developing brain, resulting in deficits in cell numbers and function. This can lead to hyperactivity, developmental delays, behavioral disorders, and decreased coordination. Children exposed to a variety of pesticides in an agricultural community in Mexico showed impaired stamina, coordination, memory, and ability to draw familiar objects. If funded by SB 290, the pesticide reporting bill would give medical professionals the tools we need to determine pesticide exposure among our patients in the food we eat, in the water we drink, and in the air we all breathe. Thank you for supporting the health of Oregonians and for voting for SB 290.
Thank you, Dr. Harris. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. I believe the chair called Mark Yeager and Joan. Joan, let's come up 3 at a time. Joan, Mark Yeager, William Lambert. Just go ahead and state your name for the record. And
Members of the committee, I am Dr. Joan Rockline, Research Associate at the Center for Research on Occupational and Environmental Toxicology at Oregon Health and Sciences University. I'm entering testimony for myself and my colleague, Dr. Bill Lambert, here sitting here with me. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony relevant to the discussion on full implementation of the pesticide use reporting system. CROWIT's mission is to promote health and prevent disease in Oregon's workplaces and communities. 4 years ago, we reviewed the utility of the proposed PERS and identified the elements required in a system to support public health protection and research activities. These recommendations were published in the Analytical Review, a document that I co-authored with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. As university scientists, we have a specific interest in programs that provide accurate and high-quality information on the sources and uses of chemicals, such as the PERS. Pesticides, as a class of chemicals, are widely used in our state. Yet, because we do not have a functioning reporting system, we cannot answer many very fundamental questions. How many persons are exposed? What are the characteristics of the exposed population? What are the sources of exposure? How large are the exposures? How frequently do they occur? With PERS in place, we can evaluate exposures to workers and the public, study health-related research questions such as cancer and learning disabilities in children, conduct health risk assessments, and develop ways to reduce unnecessary exposures. As we have learned from our ongoing studies in agricultural communities here in Oregon, our results have led to educational programs that reduce exposures for farm owners, their workers, and their families. The data from PERS on commercial and household use of pesticides would allow us to expand our research and prevention activities to urban and suburban settings in the state. Identifying what pesticides are used in Oregon, when and where they are being applied, and locating those populations at greatest risk of exposure is essential for designing our research, competing aggressively for federal funding, and analyzing our data. In closing, we strongly support the full implementation of PERS. This surveillance system would provide a valuable tool for protection of worker and public health. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you. Go ahead. We'll let everybody testify first, then we'll have questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My remarks are included with Dr. Rothline's testimony already entered.
Thank you. Thank you for coming, Doc.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Atkinson and members of the committee. My name is Mark Yeager, and I'm the Principal Utilities Engineer for the City of Albany. Thank you also for the opportunity to appear before the committee today to talk about funding for the pesticide use reporting system. I was a member of the 18-member work group that was formed nearly 6 years ago to help develop and implement a pesticide use reporting system in Oregon, and I'm here today to urge you to end the delay in the implementation of this important program. In my role with Albany, I'm responsible for both drinking water supply and water quality issues, helping to ensure that Albany citizens and all Oregon residents have an adequate supply of safe and clean drinking water now and in the future is very important. In order to keep our drinking water safe, I believe that it is critical for water suppliers to know what pesticides are being used, where they are being used, and when they are being used. Protecting citizens and sources of drinking water is our highest priority. Albany's drinking water comes from the South Santiam River and is transported 18 miles through an open canal. The same canal provides water source for the cities of Lebanon and Millersburg. Many miles of the canal are adjacent to land where agricultural and urban activities are taking place. And while we know that pesticides and other chemicals are being used in these areas, we are unable to target our water quality testing program because of the lack of information. Nearly 60,000 residents depend on this water supply, and we need better information to help us protect it. Properly designed, the pesticide use reporting system will be an effective tool to gather specific information about pesticide use, and it would provide insight into which chemicals have the highest potential for being in our source water. No other tool to gather this information exists in Oregon. With this knowledge, testing for and reduction of contaminants in source waters for drinking water supplies can be greatly targeted. In addition to protecting drinking water supplies, pesticide use information can help us to more effectively monitor and improve the quality of surface waters in our state. As Laura mentioned previously, the 1997 USGS study of the Willamette River Basin found ample evidence that pesticides are making their way into surface waters. However, in their effort to correlate land use activities with pesticide concentrations in the water, the study team had to rely on estimates of pesticide application activities because no system exists to record this information. If we are serious about cleaning up our water bodies in Oregon, we need better information, and the pesticide use reporting program needs to be implemented. Thank you for your leadership on this issue and your willingness to address the funding for this important program. I appreciate your time, and I am available for your questions.
Thank you very much. I have one question. All three of you mentioned that you believe it's necessary to know this not only from the rural side but also from the urban side. Are you three opposed to us having this reported on by zip code rather than how it's currently written?
So in the urban areas?
What's that?
Did you say in the urban areas?
Uh-huh. There's been lots of proposals kicked around doing this by watershed, doing this by
township range.
Or just doing it by zip code. Do you have any preference?
For urban areas, I would prefer zip code, and for rural areas, I would prefer section township range.
Well, shouldn't we treat both of them the same?
The population density is really quite different, and therefore, to get more site-specific information, the zip code would be preferable in an urban environment.
Well, just a question about that. I mean, you could report it both by zip code and township section range, correct?
Yes.
I mean, you could...
Yes.
Okay. Chair Ringo and Senator Atkinson, the location issue has been the subject of much discussion and debate, and I have been sort of at the center of a lot of this when we were doing the whole development of the program. One of the things that we have consistently stated is that having a geographically based system for recording the information is very important, and zip codes are not geographically based. They change. In the city of Albany, for example, when we started this process, when I was on the governor's task force, there was one zip code in Albany. Population has grown. We now have two zip codes. We will continue to have additional zip codes placed in the state of Oregon as population densities increase, and the post office doesn't have a geographically based system for doing that. It's based on population density. So we have consistently been arguing for a land-based system such as township range and section that does not change. The zip codes will continue to change in Oregon. There will be more of them, and if we want to have a historical database that we are able to track, if we had been recording this information in 1999, in Albany, the zip code 97321 would have had data reported, and when it came time for the new zip code to be created, you wouldn't know where in 97321 that application actually took place. So I would urge you in this discussion about the location aspect of the bill to make it on a land-based system like township range and section.
How big is a township?
How big is a township? I should know this.
Right, my next question is how big is a section and how big is a range?
Right, and I don't know those numbers off the top of my head. I should know those.
Excuse me. Senator Beyer will enlighten us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, a township is 36 square miles, six miles by 6 miles. A section is 1 square mile of that said township. Township and range are two ways to describe a township, and they're all based off the Willamette Meridian, which is located probably in your district up in the Hillsborough area.
So township and range are the same thing?
Yes.
They're not exactly, excuse me.
Section and range.
For instance, we are located probably in township 6 south, either 1 west or 1 east, probably 1 east right here. So if the township is the first number, the range is the second number.
Okay.
It's all a certain number of miles from the Willamette Meridian, which is a point in over by Hillsborough.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Beyer. I mean, given that, then you want a measuring system that doesn't move around.
That's correct.
But the opponents are concerned that it's too small geographically. I mean, it seems to me that there ought to be a way to reconcile those, where you would report by, I don't know, by section, or by township and not section.
I'm happy to respond there.
Go ahead.
Chair Ringo and members of the committee. I think the issue there is how specific is the information and how detailed can you get when you're talking about the analysis of what you're trying to figure out. In our water system, for example, the canal, which goes 18 miles through the valley from the South San Ynez River to the Willamette River, crosses through many townships and sections and ranges. And so when you talk about getting it too high of a scale, for me to try to figure out where a particular pesticide might be coming into my watershed, into my source supply, if it's too high of a scale, I won't be able to know that. We could say that it would be within the Willamette River Basin, for example. That's been one of the discussions, is having some discussion about doing it on a watershed. And watersheds, you could do it on a watershed, provided it's a small enough scale that it can help you to figure out what's happening within the area that's important to you.
So what is that scale that you need?
We believe that it should be township, range, and section. 1 square mile, 1 mile by 1 mile as the land area, we think is the area that is best for trying to have the information at a detailed level.
Okay. Senator Shields?
Quick comment. I'm not going to talk about where the Willamette Meridian and stuff is, but if you haven't been to the Willamette Stone, you haven't been to the place from which every measurement in the state is based. It's all from that one stone, and I mean, it doesn't change, because ever since we started surveying in Oregon, we've been working basically from that one large rock, and it's something everybody here ought to visit sometime. It really should, if they care about Oregon. My question is more to the Oregon Health Sciences folks. CROAT, I've served on your advisory board for years. You do the kind of research that affects our lives in a lot more ways than we recognize. In that research, your decisions and the things that you produce are usually paid for, actually, by us. We don't even know it, because we don't pay that much attention to the workers' comp system and a little bit of money that, you know, gets paid in, because you're actually helping us keep our workers safer and all that stuff. But I know that because you apply for grants all the time, you analyze the cost-benefit of this, that, and the other thing. It has to be a part of the grant process. The lack of this information, therefore, could cost us money. Okay? Have you done some calculation in terms of what the lack of this information could be costing us, just as you've done with some of your other research projects? I know that's a tough question, and I don't expect an exact answer, but I've watched your process up at OHSU enough that I think at least you would come very close to doing it.
Well, we have been very successful in competing for federal dollars that fund research studies that depend upon adequate surveillance data, health registry data, chemical registry data. And with that knowledge, we're able to develop our research design and target our populations that are at greatest risk of exposure where we would want to conduct those studies. The PERS system provides us with that information concerning the use and the distribution of pesticides throughout the state. And with that knowledge, we can then develop our studies and compete more successfully, we feel, for those federal dollars. I mean, some of the grants are really quite large. The grants that we've...
Okay.
You've taken
me halfway there, okay? Colleagues, I just want to say one thing, and that is I've sat on this CROAP board for so long that I know how well they get grants from the federal government and lots of places. Millions of dollars of grant monies come in to do the research, and as part of that application, they have to look at the numbers. And I wouldn't be surprised if they took a little time, they could figure out what not only this information would benefit in terms of finances at one end. I mean, you've probably got a dollar figure to the amount of health care savings for the farmers that didn't get pesticides on them and their families and workers. That's just your process. At the other end of it, you probably have some idea of how much we've lost and by not having had this information. And I'm just saying, if you can get some kind of a ballpark figure for us, I think it might be very helpful.
We'd be happy to work on those numbers for you.
Am I making any sense over
yes.
here?
Okay. Yes, exactly. No. Thank you. I'd like to just follow up. You explained how the information would be useful towards your research and help you understand the impact of pesticides. And I apologize because I missed your testimony. But are you able to take that research and connect the use of pesticides to cancer clusters, for example, or areas of heightened illness?
One of the studies that we're currently working on actually does measure the level of pesticide metabolites in persons' bodies, and we are developing measurements of neurobehavioral activity in these individuals, both workers and children. And I would imagine that's the kind of study that you're speaking about, where we're able to try and investigate the correlation between an exposure to a hazardous substance and a health effect.
Okay, thank you. Senator Atkinson, you had a question? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's bring up Katie Koba, please, and then right after Mr. Pitt, because he has a schedule, I understand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. I'm Katie Koba, Director of the Department of Agriculture, and with me this afternoon is Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director with the Department. Would help if I distributed my testimony, wouldn't it? I'll wait until it's handed out for you.
Okay.
Senate Bill 290 would amend current Oregon law, which authorizes the implementation of the statewide pesticide use reporting system. The bill amends the pesticide registration fee, also currently in statute, to mirror the authorizing statute. The bill would require the agency to establish reporting requirements for all pesticide product sales. This would be a new requirement. And requires the Oregon Department of Agriculture to use up to $60 from each pesticide registration fee to implement PERS. The bill removes the requirement for an equal expenditure of state general fund dollars for implementing PERS and makes the system permanent. The Department of Agriculture supports the implementation of the pesticide use reporting system as proposed in House Bill 2152 and the Governor's recommended budget. The agency does have concerns with the changes proposed in this bill. The funding provision as proposed in the bill, and this is before the information we had, which the Oregon Environmental Council spoke to in terms of amendments to change the fee. But the current bill, the funding mechanism is not adequate to cover the cost of implementing pesticide use reporting system, and even the new amendment that was referenced earlier would not be enough in terms of fee revenue to implement a pesticide sales reporting system. The governor's recommended budget includes $959,639 in general fund and $950,705 in other funds that would be collected from the existing authorized fee to finish developing the PERS system and operate it for 2 years. We estimate the cost to develop and operate a pesticide sales reporting system to be an additional $1.2 million on top of those numbers included in the governor's recommended budget. Without the amendments that were discussed earlier, the implementation of this bill would actually result in reduced funding for the department's base pesticide program activities, which include product registration, licensing, investigation, and certification.
If I could just interject, mm-hmm. Is that correct? If it's amended as you heard, what would be the impact on that if the amendment goes through, changing it up? I think it was to $200.
Mr. Chairman, we did a quick calculation, and we believe that we need to be somewhere between $200 and $210, and it basically is dependent on what you use as a base for the number of products that will be registered. In all of our calculations for the fiscal impact that we've given the committee for the pesticide use reporting system, we're assuming 9,600 products to be registered, which means you'd need $210 as your fee. I think probably what was mentioned in terms of $200 includes an assumption of 10,000 products. It's probably somewhere in there. We've been conservative in all of the numbers, so that is consistent with all the numbers that we've given on pesticide use reporting system. So 200 to 210.
Okay. As long as I interrupted you, I'll ask something else.
Fine.
That's okay. All the products are... The fee is imposed equally, regardless of how widely used that product is. Was there any analysis to make it so that the products with the biggest distribution, I guess arguably the ones making the most profit, would also pay the highest fee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn over to Lisa and see if she can answer it. If not, I'm sure we have some experts in the audience who could.
Okay.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director with the Department of Agriculture. I believe back when this fee was set, it was set to be an equal fee to all pesticide products used or registered in Oregon.
Okay, but was there consideration to do otherwise?
And I was not working with the program at the time the initial bill was implemented.
All right, well, I bet somebody is in the room and can tell us, but not. Go ahead and continue, please.
The Department of Ag currently charges $120 for each pesticide product registration to fund the base program. In addition, the current law allows the department to collect an additional $40 from each pesticide product registration to fund PERS. So with that surcharge of $40 coupled with the general fund equal amount, we have calculated that that is enough to fund the PERS system. And as we've talked, the bill is currently written would allow up to $60 from each pesticide product registration, but it doesn't raise the fee enough, so we'd have to actually cut into our base program to fund the pesticide use reporting system. And I just wanted to emphasize again, even with the proposal that was mentioned earlier today, if the fee was taken to $200 or $210, that would still not be enough to fund a new sales reporting system as outlined in this bill. The other thing which I think was spoken to by the Oregon Environmental Council earlier is the bill does need clarification to clearly state that this does not require households to report. There's some confusion the way the bill is written. If households are required to report, again, that bumps the cost up even higher.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Senator Atkinson?
Thank you. Director Koba, could you comment real quick on the repeal of the sunset in this bill. Is that good public policy?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson, as I mentioned in my testimony, we support House Bill 2152, which does not eliminate the sunset, but extends the sunset out 7 years. When the bill was initially passed, I think the idea behind it was to establish the system, put a sunset period in state, so once in the statute, so that once the system was up and running and you could see what was actually coming in terms of information, you'd have an automatic kind of opportunity to review the program under a sunset. So we're, the governor's budget does not eliminate the sunset, but extends it out, assuming the program is indeed implemented, and gives time to get the program in motion and then have a chance to review the program.
Thank you.
Anything else? Senator Beyer?
I don't know if it's a question for Director Cole, but she mentioned a fiscal analysis. So do we have a fiscal statement issued for the bill?
There hasn't been one issued yet. There's a person they're working on.
My understanding is that a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else, committee? Okay. Thank you very much. Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Pitts.
For the record, I'm Louis Pitt, Jr., Yowen Schwick from the Wolf-Lala people and the Cascade Locks area, and with the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon. I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 290, which would revive and fund the pesticide use reporting program in the Department of Agriculture. We're tribal people with a treaty that depends much on salmon, deer, and roots and berries, and salmon, sturgeon, lamprey, and other fish are important to our people, far beyond what words can express. And water, along with those creatures that live in the water, are wonderful gifts from the Creator. These creations are the basis of our culture and our survival for many thousands of years. If these are poisoned, our people, which eat from anywhere from 10 to 11 times as many fish as the average Oregonian. Just recently, this last few years, we've lost a number of folks that were fishers on the Columbia River to cancer, and a lot of our folks are very concerned because of that increased consumption of salmon by our peoples. We have, I think, in the record, we have the 2002 EPA Warm Springs and three other tribes with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission did a survey of fish tissue contaminants in the Columbia River Basin. And I'm a layman on these type of things, and I guess in summary is that it there was, a alarming number of increases of various pesticides, metals, and forms of PCBs, and other really miscellaneous organic chemicals in the various foods that we're really concerned with. We have a poster here that is kind of one of the summaries of the report that EPA did that Matt and Mike could take a look-see at here.
Poster children
here. The survey that EPA and...
is there a way so that the audience can see that, too? Maybe hold it against...
Chair and committee,
I
think one of the keys to this is that the surveys that were taken is that they're mainly on the Columbia River. The Warm Springs Confederated Tribes in the middle part of this is that not only is it the reservation that we're concerned about, is that we have given to the United States certain amounts of land, and we have rights to fish and hunt throughout the state of Oregon. That was our attorneys tell us at the time of the treaty in 1855. And so we collect and lamprey, assume eels, and at times also other fish, salmon at the Willamette Falls, and fish throughout the Columbia for fish. Over here is, I think, a graph of the chemicals from PCBs, to organics, and basically you have creatures that spend a lot of time on the bottom of the river systems that have an incredible amount of chemicals in them, and then the more freshwater fish that also work towards the surface of the waters and are part-time in the waters that go out to the ocean, or the anadromous fish, is that they have lesser amounts, but still with the idea that as the conclusions state, is that there's a lot of, I think, concern about what we don't know, and that those amount of chemicals, especially when it's added to the consumption rate that our tribal people use. I talked to one of our kitchen experts at our tribe and asked her what she thought about basically the amounts that EPA talked about as being an amount of consumption, and it was pretty much about a tenth of, again, what we considered. And she mentioned non-Indian servings versus Indian servings, is that our folks really do love salmon, eat a lot of salmon. When I was a younger kid, I spent kind of like summer school at Celilo Falls, and we ate salmon three times a day. And if you got up to snack, guess what you had? You had salmon. And so we still have folks that consume a lot of salmon throughout this whole watershed of the Columbia, and that's roughly about a 30 million square miles of areas that or acres that that the four tribes can, are at. Roughly the maximum amount of consumption that one of the tribes is using, we're looking at it too, is 389 grams per day, which is roughly 14 ounces of uncooked fresh fish. That's a lot of fish, but again, I would agree, I think that I know some families that do that probably even today. And so in support of Senate Bill 290, we understand that this, you know, it's not the total answer, but it will not even lessen pollution, but it will tell us where we need to improve the health of our streams to save our precious children and the salmon people, of which we're all a part of the salmon people. And so we hope the committee takes a step towards this. And again, is that if... as layman, Michael and I were getting a kick out of how much we don't know about the grass, is that our science folks that are related to the water quality and this type of thing are working on Portland Harbor today, so they were trying to focus in on that and basically shared this with us, and they left the door open. If there's a point that you need to have some of our science interpreters, we can get them down here. Okay. So that's all we have today, Chairman. Thank you, committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pitt. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Let's hear a little bit from the against side, just to mix it up a little bit. Terry Witt and Barry Shu.
Contrary to popular belief, this is not my twin brother. But
you should be so lucky. You always say that first, right?
There you go. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt, and I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, based in Salem. Pesticide use reporting directly impacts almost every OFS member, either as a user who must report or as a registrant who must pay. Therefore, the details of how this program is changed are very important to all of our members. In 1999, for better or worse, I was one of the primary authors, if not the primary author, of the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3602. The Dash 4 amendments were adopted and became the be-engrossed version of that bill, which ultimately passed both the House and the Senate and was signed by Governor Kitzhaber. I was also a member of the statutorily designated stakeholder group responsible for crafting a set of draft implementation rules for citizen review through the public hearings process. PERS is not and was never designed to be a pesticide right to know act nor a pesticide tracking statute. It was an honest attempt to start a workable, cost-efficient use reporting program based on sound science that minimizes cost and burden to those who report and places equal emphasis on urban and rural use and protects the confidentiality of those who submit the data and, most importantly, equitably spreads the cost to all Oregonians. We oppose Senate Bill 290 for a number of reasons, but first, we oppose it because it basically repeals the current sunset in statute of December 31st, 2009. This was an important element in the original bill. It was placed there to ensure that the legislature does a timely evaluation of PERS and that it would assess the relative benefit or value of the program, the effectiveness and efficiency of implementation, which is a mandate in the statute, and also the ability of the program to protect the confidentiality of the data that's submitted, another mandate in the statute. Number two, Senate Bill 290 also repeals the 50-50 funding mechanism that is currently in statute. A match of monies that are contributed as a PERS add-on to the registration fee, provided that those funds are matched by an equal amount of general fund dollars. This is a very important consideration in this particular program. This program is not designed to be punitive of pesticide users or pesticide registrants. It is designed to be a general information program that is for the general welfare of the public, and the public needs to have a cost share in this matter, number one. And number two, that one of the other reasons that was put in there is specifically for the purpose that we've seen in the last biennium and this biennium. When the budget gets tight, we need to have a mechanism that requires the legislature to do one of its primary functions, which is to appropriate and prioritize limited resources.
Just to step in, Mr. Witt, for a second, do you support general funding, funding from the general fund for pesticide use reporting?
Yes, we do.
At what level?
Pardon?
At what level?
At a match.
Okay.
That was our proposal, and we still support that position. So basically, the bill, the way it's written right now, eliminates that. And as was testified by some of the others, apparently the numbers are wrong that are in the bill, which I still think is important to point out that as the bill is currently written, and that's all I can go by, as it is currently written, it actually decreases funding to PERS by the equivalent of $20 per product, or a shortfall of about $190,000 per year. And that would then need to come out of the base pesticide program, which is essential to the control and monitoring and enforcement of our pesticide laws in this state that are done in concert with the US EPA under FIFRA. Excuse me. Third, we really have a problem with regard to what we see as a major expansion of the pesticide use reporting program, with the addition of the word "establish requirements for reporting of pesticide sales, distribution, or use by any person." This significantly modifies the original intent of the bill, which was to deal with those folks who apply a pesticide in the course of business or any other for-profit enterprise or for a government entity or in a location that is intended for public use or access. I respectively disagree with some of the comments that were talking about what legislative counsel says the intent of this language would be. We have seen repeated times where a bill is passed, and unfortunately what happens is it goes to courts, and the courts are the ones that determine how a bill will be interpreted. I think it's fairly clear that in the statute it defines pesticide user, and that pesticide user is not any person. I think this statute opens it up to not only sales reporting, but I think it opens it up to any person that uses a pesticide, including mosquito repellent.
And if we move the bill, you would like us to clarify that?
I think it needs to be clarified and taken out, Chair Ringo.
Thank you.
And then finally, excuse me, one thing that the bill doesn't do is it does not really clarify or resolve the conflict over reporting location. When we discussed this in the stakeholders meeting, we really could not resolve that conflict. We came to some, I think, conclusions, and to maybe shed a little light on one of the comments, I believe it was you, Chair Ringo, that asked about different reporting mechanisms in different locations. One of the things that I think we did agree on was that urban environments would report by zip code. road. And the reason that was so important is that we do have commercial applicators that apply structural pest control and also landscape pest control. Some of these companies have 10, 12 trucks, and in a given area will do 15, 20,000 applications in a year's time. It's almost impossible for them to convert everything from a street address to a section township range. There is, believe it or not, there is no software available to do that. They had to do it manually. And during a trial period, one of our companies in the greater Springfield, Eugene area had to put on a full-time person to be able to translate street addresses to section. So it's a very difficult thing to do.
Do you have a suggestion in that regard?
Chair Ringo, that in that particular case, urban environments were recommended to report by zip code. And that is a small enough area in an urban environment. And number two, it allowed professional applicators to use a computer program to trigger off of their invoicing or billing.
Okay. So let's talk about rural areas.
in the rural environment, as I said, we were not able to reach consensus in the stakeholders group, and a package went out for public comment. There were 9 hearings across the state. The result of those hearings, the public hearings officer recommended that for agriculture and forestry, that report by Watershed, that was also supported by the Department of Agriculture, and it was supported by the Board of Agriculture. The reason we wound up with section township range is because Governor Kitzhaber unilaterally forced that change through the department's rulemaking process. So what we wound up with was a situation that basically circumvented the public hearings process, and we think that's inappropriate. And that's one of the reasons why we've seen, as a result of that, I think considerable pushback from the forest and agricultural community through the legislative process, through constituents concerned about this basically circumventing the public policy process and injecting someone else's will into the position. So we firmly believe that Watershed is an appropriate level to start with, particularly in the forest and agricultural areas. One of the major concerns, Chair, that our members have is the ability of the department to maintain confidentiality. This is a major, major concern of our people. We have seen instances of eco-terrorism and destruction in buildings, and people are very, very concerned that they not be identified. And so this is one of the major concerns that we have.
Okay.
Be glad to answer any questions. Oh, I would like to make one point before Barry makes comment. There were a number of folks that were talking about why we need this program and made comments to the effect that use information data will basically tell them about exposures to humans. I totally disagree with that concept. Use does not equal exposure, and exposure does not necessarily equal dose. Dose is what is the potential driving force for a pesticide to have a potential negative outcome. It's the old tenet of toxicology that says dose makes the poison. Right. So just by knowing how many pounds of pesticides are used in a particular section level tells you absolutely nothing about whether or not any individuals within that area have been exposed, and furthermore, whether they've received a body burden dose.
Well, just because it's not definitive doesn't mean it's not useful information in letting you take the next step in the investigation. It's still useful information.
Senator Ringo, it may be useful information. I guess one has to weigh the cost of that useful information and how useful is it.
Okay. Do you accept that there's a link between pesticides and cancer?
I think laboratory data has shown that there can be links between laboratory animals and high exposures, yes.
All right. And Oregonians for Food and Shelter, is that connected with the pesticide industry?
Oregonians for Food and Shelter, basically, we represent 3 major categories. One are the agricultural users of agrochemicals. Second would be the forest landowner users of chemicals. And third would be professional applicators and registrants. So yes, we do represent people who rely on these beneficial tools for their business, but the majority of our members are user community rather than supplier community.
Okay. Do you accept that pesticides will run off into the public waterways?
Chair Ringo, pesticides can run off. They typically are runoff associated with sedimentation rather than percolation or just merely running off dissolved in water. But yes, they can move.
Okay. And do you accept that the public has a right to clean waterways?
I do.
Okay. And you're willing to help us achieve that goal?
Chair Ringo, first of all, I think it's imperative that you understand that we are not trying to say that a user of pesticides has the right to pollute or the right to injure man or animal. And we work very diligently with the department to ensure that people are using these materials according to label, which is the law, and do them in a responsible manner. We do not defend folks who use these irresponsibly.
Thank you. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you letting me be here today to hear this interesting testimony, and I have to leave for a meeting. But, Terry, I had a question for you regarding level of reporting at the watershed scale, and was there agreement as to what size watershed? I mean, we're talking fifth field, sixth field, Hucks. Was there agreement on, because, you know, it could be the Willamette Basin, or we could be talking about Tryon Creek or, you know, a very small watershed. So was there a discussion about at what level hydrologic unit you would be promoting?
Chair Ringo, Representative Dingfelder. No, because we never really got to that point. Last session, there was some discussions between myself and Jim Myron of the governor's office. At that point in time, we were looking at fourth field Huck, which is basically a sub-basin level. I believe there's like 92, that would divide the state into like 90 or 92 different geographic areas.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Shields?
Yes, Terry, I have a hard time remembering what happened last week, so I have a harder time remembering what happened 6 years ago. But when you made the comment about Governor Kitzhaber unilaterally mandating something, I thought you were part of a group that discussed this stuff and that there was some kind of a vote. I just would like you to clarify a little more. I thought there were some, and maybe somebody else here remembers it.
Chair Ringo, Senator Shields, I was part of what was known as the stakeholders group that it was referred to earlier, 18, a variety of different backgrounds and interests. We got together and worked for many, many months along with representatives from Oregon Health Sciences University and OSU to try to go through as in as detailed as we could to come up with a set of implementation rules. And there were some areas that were, I think, were fairly easy to resolve in terms of how the very detailed rules would come out. In other areas, we had to basically, I think, end up agreeing to disagree. one of the areas that we agreed to disagree on, I think, was the reporting location primarily for agriculture and forestry. I think there was some consensus on reporting for public applicators, that was by address, urban commercial applicators, that was by zip code, and certain other parameters dealing with things like application to waterways or rights of ways in on streets and those kind of things.
So some of it was voted on by this
Senator Shields, the process that we used, we had a professional facilitator for this group, and the process that we used started out with a disclaimer that we will go through and we will try to reach consensus on each of the sub portions of these rules, but we would not agree to the entire package until everything was finished, because many things are linked together. And so we, about halfway through the process, we did recognize that we were not going to reach consensus on reporting location, and it was left as an element that we knew was going to out for public hearing, and we get a greater degree of exposure and public input. And so while there was tentative agreement going through the process, it was never finally agreed to in terms of here's a package that everyone agrees to and would fully support during the rulemaking process.
Well, from my perspective, the question isn't what was happened in 1999. It's what should we do in 2005, just to put that out there. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. I do have one more question, though. In the rural areas, you want to report by zip code. You want to report by watershed.
Chair Ringo, in the rural areas,
yes. You want to report
in the rural areas, we would like to report by watershed or fourth field hook.
And the resistance to reporting by in a smaller scale is fear of ecoterrorism.
Chair Ringo, I think it's twofold. Number one is the amount of reporting that is required, and number two is therefore a burden on the user, and number two is the potential to be identified specifically. That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Do you know, has there ever been any Eco-Terrorist Act related to pesticide uses?
Chair Ringo, I don't think anyone has a program like this one. The state of California has a completely different system for reporting. They have county ag commissioners, and their program also cost about $20 million to implement.
Okay.
So,
okay, thank you, Mr. Bashu.
Thank you, Chair Ringo, and members of the committee. I am Barry Bashu, a full-time farmer from the Gresham area, and president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I was also a member of the Pesticide Use Reporting System Working Group appointed by Governor Kitzhaber. I'm here today to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 290. The issue of pesticide reporting has been very contentious in the agricultural community. Our members are rightly concerned about the cost of the program, the confidentiality of the reported information, the inherent risk of litigation and harassment. Despite this, they took a leap of faith and supported House Bill 3602. We were actively engaged with the entire process to help develop a usable, common-sense system to report the use of pesticides. I have some comments about watershed, and I won't dwell on it because I think it's been covered. However, I would point out that we were very frustrated by the fact that the previous governor basically ignored the public's interest and the public's input and decided to mandate a location of township, range, and section.
Well, I think he was interested in the public interest, but that's just my spin.
Fair enough. Go ahead. Well, I guess we can agree to disagree.
Yeah, we will.
However, our opposition to Senate Bill 290 is based on the following concerns. Senate Bill 290 fails to adequately address the location issue. Senate Bill 290 eliminates the 2009 sunset clause, making PERS permanent. We believe the sunset clause is necessary to provide an opportunity to assess the cost, relative benefits, effectiveness, and the confidentiality of the program. It is incumbent on the legislature to have an opportunity to assess this new program. Senate Bill 290 would establish pesticide sales reporting. This concept was discussed at length by the Pesticide Use Reporting Work Group and never included in the draft or the final rules. There was no reliable model to correlate point of purchase to location or time of use, and there seems to be little validity or relationship between sales and patterns of usage. Perhaps the most contentious of all our concerns is the funding mechanism of Senate Bill 290. PERS was not done at the request of Oregon Department of Agriculture nor the agricultural community. It was a narrow special interest segment of the public that put forward the initial request. I assume the rationale was the information regarding pesticide use would benefit the public as a whole. That being said, it is only appropriate that the general public, through the general fund, should bear at least 50% of the cost. To force the industry to fund the entire package is not only onerous, it fails to recognize the inherent costs, burden, and risks already borne by the user community. I will jump briefly to the watershed issue, if I may. I think it's interesting that much of the discussion here today has been about the quality of water. And I would agree wholeheartedly the quality of water is a huge issue for the state of Oregon. I think it's interesting that the water users are more concerned about specific local points of location rather than watershed. I would think they would be interested more in the health of their watershed as a whole, and therefore I believe pertinent to the use of watershed as a location. It does, however, give me great delight that there seems to be as much interest in other segments of the community in water quality as there has been in the agricultural industry and its commitment to Senate Bill 1010. I don't think there's anything else or any other segment of the industry or of society that has done as much to help improve the quality of water as the agricultural community. So we share those concerns and only hope that the rest of the segments of society can come to that standard. In summary, I would ask that each of you consider the position of the agricultural community. Faced with the concept of pesticide use reporting, we worked in conjunction with all involved to develop a workable program that we have continued to support. It included reporting by watershed, 50-50 funding with half coming from the general fund as allocated by the legislature, treating PERS with the same priority as other new programs, and maintaining the confidentiality of collected information. This was far from an easy accomplishment. It required considerable negotiations with our own members and with the environmental community. We have been resolute but fair in our position. In fact, I believe there is little doubt that House Bill 3206 and a basic pesticide use reporting system would be up and running now if some representatives of the environmental community had decided it was better to have a functioning system based on watershed than no system at all. Senate Bill 290 moves the pendulum even further from what we view as a reasonable compromise. With all respect, I ask that each of you remember it is easy to talk about compromise when one puts nothing at risk in the discussion. Those who would have an onerous right-to-know bill funded entirely by farmers bring no risk and no responsibility for the outcome to the table. Farmers, on the other hand, put it all on the line. I respectfully encourage you to oppose Senate Bill 290.
Thank you, Mr. Bashir. Just a couple comments, you know, on everybody doing their fair share on water quality. I mean, Portland water ratepayers are spending more than $1 billion. That's $1 billion on the combined sewage overflow to clean up the Portland harbor. So it's not as if ag is doing the only thing. I think everybody needs to help do their fair share to improve the water quality. And I assure you that those of us living in the Portland metro area are doing their fair share. Also, you know, you said that it was a narrow special interest that pushed through pesticide use reporting. I think that really there's a very, very broad public support for improving water quality and for concerns about cancer. Those are very broad concerns, and to label them special interest, narrow special interest, I think is inappropriate. That's just my comment, but I would ask for questions or comments from the committee. Okay. Mr. Witt wants...
Just one point, Chair Ringo. There was some discussion before talking about where the registration fee would have to be in order to fully fund the pesticide use reporting program as outlined in the governor's budget of, I think, $1.9 million. And Director Koba was talking about between $200 and $210 per product. The one point I'd like to make is that of all of the pesticides registered in the state, a little less than or a little more than half of those pesticides are what you would probably consider to be a traditional pesticide, an insecticide or herbicide, fungicide, rodenticide, the type of things that farmers and homeowners would use for controlling, you know, bugs and weeds. About 40% or roughly around 4,000 registrations are antimicrobials or disinfectants, things like toilet bowl cleaner and tub and tile cleaner, those kind of products. They are also paying into the registration fee. One of the things that is definitely a real problem is, should we raise the registration fee considerably from the 120 or 160 to 220, 240, many of those registrations that have minor sales volumes in the state will drop off. And what that does is either put the funding at a deficit level or requires the remaining registrants to be raised even higher. So I think it's pretty safe to say that if we bumped the registration fee considerably, we would not be seeing 9,600 registrations on an annual basis. It would be considerably less than that.
Well, Mr. Wood, I think that's a fair comment, and that speaks to the question I asked earlier about whether it makes sense to charge the same registration fee regardless of how much one of the products is used.
I'm not sure how one would go about obtaining that information, okay. Chair Ringo, or what I think the other consideration would be, what would be the cost of generating a very uneven, you know, registration process. That would be something maybe the department could take a look at. I don't Well, I am not aware of any other state that does that, by the way. So
okay. I
must
was
be
not
a
here
reason.
In 1999. It just seems to me that if you have a product that is widely used and generating lots of revenues for the seller, that it wouldn't be inappropriate to expect them to pay a little more. But
Chair Ringo,
I'll leave
you
the
know,
details
I mean,
to you.
Well, Chair Ringo, there are many ways. I mean, another way you could look at it would be, well, let's look at the mammalian toxicity of a chemical, and those that are lesser toxicity pay lesser amounts. I mean, there are a variety of mechanisms, but
are you on board?
It becomes
on that concept.
Mike? Pardon?
Are you on board? What you just said?
It would be very difficult to implement.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much.
You.
Diane Drum and Michael Herman. Human. I'm sorry.
Thank you so much for listening to me today, Chair Ringo and members of the Environment and Land Use Committee. My name is Diane. I live in Portland. I'm here as a member of the Oregon Nurses Association Health Policy Cabinet and as a public health nurse who works with mothers and babies. But most importantly, I want you to know I'm here on my own time as a mother of three children. The ONA supported the creation of PERS because we felt like it was essential for the protection and the promotion of public health. It has never been funded, so we're here again today to support Senate Bill 290. In World War II, we began to use a wide array of chemicals. My grandparents were born on organic farms. My parents were born on organic farms, and frankly, it's a past that they look to with a sense of drudgery and deprivation, if not shame. The reason they are proud of their roots is because they left it. A lot of the chemicals that were used had immediately measurable effects. For example, DDT, which was relatively soon regulated. But what if DDT had caused a 10% increase in learning disabilities? What if DDT had caused a 30% increase in learning disabilities only for the children who were exposed at a certain stage of gestation? What if DDT had caused a 20% rate increase in testicular cancer, which only showed up 30 years later? There would be people here today defending the use of DDT and telling you that we don't have enough science to say that DDT was a problem. In the last three decades, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma has increased 100%. Brain cancer, 80 to 90%. Testicular cancer in men 28 to 35 years old, 300%. Childhood cancer, 40 to 50%. These statistics are adjusted for population shifts such as increased age. Cancer kills more of us in Oregon than heart disease. I personally know two girls less than 14 years old who have ovarian cancer. Breast cancer incidence in Oregon is, in the last 5 years, has been second or third in the nation. Many of us are grandmothers. Many of us are mothers with young children. And we want the necessary information to protect our children from potentially harmful chemicals. We want to be able to look at a website and see what was used in a specific area in the last year. The question of learning disabilities is more difficult. The Journal of the American Medical Association estimates that autism spectrum disorder has increased by 10%, at least a minimum of 10%, since 1980, after adjusting for changes in diagnosis. One in six of our children is learning disabled, and special education costs now are a quarter of our national education spending. My parents were blind. They were well-intentioned, but they were blind. But today, we are starting to get a little bit clearer vision thanks to the work of people in epidemiology, toxicology, and developmental biology. Our vision is still blurry, but there are some things that we know, and I want to share some of these things with you, and they are very important to think about, especially in terms of fetuses and developing children. "The dose makes the poison" is no longer relevant nor true. A child exposed to certain pesticide chemicals at a specific stage of development may have more consequences that will last them their entire life from a minute dose than later exposures will have at a much higher dose. There are certain estrogen mimickers that enter the human cell at a lower dose more readily than they enter the human cells at a higher dose, because when they are at a lower dose, they look more like the real thing. In California, a survey of pregnant women showed that in a 9-square-mile area, that women who were pregnant had 40 to 120% times the likelihood of a miscarriage if they were in a 9-square-mile area of a place that was heavily using pesticides. In 1996, epidemiologists in Minnesota compared the east non-agricultural side of the state with the western agricultural side of the state. In the western side of the state, non-farming families who lived in the agricultural side of the state were 85% more likely to have babies with birth defects. Children conceived in the spring and in early gestation, when chemicals were more widely used, were at significantly increased risk than those conceived at other times of the year. That pattern did not show itself in the east. It was non-agricultural. As a mother, as a maternal child nurse, and as an ONA spokesperson, I am here to support Senate Bill number 290 for two reasons. Parents and concerned citizens have the right to basic, although albeit general, info in order to make personal decisions regarding pesticide avoidance. And scientists and public health officials need increased information in order to better stand and promote public health. A lot of mothers, a lot of your constituents do not want to think about this. It is overwhelming. And they do not want to think about this, and they may not care. Some of your constituents have used pesticides all their life, and for all they know, they are still healthy, and they have a deep personal belief that these things cannot really be that dangerous. They, I am sure, are well-intentioned, but a personal experience is not an epidemiological fact. Some people don't want us to have increased knowledge, because they fear that increased knowledge may lead to increased cost, and they would prefer that we remain blindfolded. I would say that increased knowledge could show us what pesticides are the safest. I would say that increased knowledge could lead to more specific regulation rather than generalized fears. And if you think as a society we do not know how to balance risks and benefits, let's look at cars. We know that they're killing machines, but by knowing the risk of those cars, we're able to develop new technologies like car seats and airbags and seat belts. You know, if we knew more of what was happening with pesticides in our bodies, I am sure we could develop new technologies to solve questions and problems for all of Oregon's citizens. I can't tell you how glad I am that you are up there and not me. It just boggles me to hear the different testimony and the different concerns, and I thank you so much for being a service to our community. There are technical things in this bill that I have difficulty following, but most importantly, as a mother, I want you to keep two questions in mind as you move this bill forward. Can we take this blindfold that is over the eyes of parents and open it a little bit? And can we increase our knowledge in such a way to help our community see more clearly our path to a healthier future? Thank you. And I'm sorry, I'm emotional. I will be glad to take any questions. I'm not an epidemiologist, but I've done a lot of reading. I'll take any questions you have, even if they don't let my emotion make you feel like you can't ask questions that would disagree with me, because you can.
Well, Ms. Drum, I want to thank you for your very compelling testimony. And I mean, to me personally, this gets to the heart of the matter. Are pesticides causing cancers? Are they causing birth defects? Are they causing learning disabilities? And if so, then we need to roll up our sleeves and address it. Any questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Hume.
Good afternoon, Chair Ringo and members of the committee. For the record, I am Michael Heumann. I'm the manager of the Environmental and Occupational Epidemiology Program in the Office of Disease Prevention and Epidemiology in the Department of Human Services, and I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 290. Suspected cases of pesticide-related illness have been a reportable condition in Oregon since 1987, both in statute and in rule. The Department of Human Services tracks and evaluates pesticide illnesses and injury reports from throughout the state. In addition, the department works in collaboration with the Department of Agriculture and six other state agencies through the Pesticide Analytical and Response Center, also known as PARC. PARC, as you know, is mandated by statute to coordinate the efforts of these eight state agencies to investigate reported incidents of pesticide exposure that impact humans, animals, and the environment. The Department of Human Services is supportive of the efforts to put in place a reporting system for pesticide use because it will provide critical information that is needed to understand the public health risks of using pesticide products, both in urban and rural parts of our state. For example, when we get reports of pesticide poisoning cases in our state, we're able to know what product was the offending agent. We're able to know where the person was when they were exposed to the product. What we're not able to do is to put that into a larger context. How often is the product used, over how many square acres or miles or how many tons of the product are being used, and where in the state are people at risk for use and exposure to this product. For example, our department would draw very different conclusions about the risk involved depending upon how often the pesticide is applied and what information there would be regarding human exposure. So, for example, if the exposure occurred once out of five applications, the department would probably conclude that the risk is substantial, and we would want to target our prevention efforts on the geographical area where those risks were highest. On the other hand, concern about a pesticide or an area that was much less likely for exposure, that, say, occurred only once every 500,000 applications, this information we would be far less concerned about, and we could move on and focus our prevention efforts on those higher risk areas. This information about pesticide use by area is essential for the department to evaluate public health risks to Oregonians. In 2003, the Department of Human Services received and tracked 153 cases of reported pesticide poisoning in Oregon. These reports included exposures resulting from use of pesticides in homes, in gardens, in schools, public buildings, and parks, as well as in agriculture and forests. The information from the pesticide use reporting system will allow public health to place the poisoning reports into the context of how often and over how wide of an area these products are being used. This important information will help us in understanding those products which might be causing increased risk for Oregonians. In summary, pesticide use reporting is important for the department to evaluate public health risks associated with pesticide exposure. The removal of the sunset clause for pesticide use reporting will allow the system to become fully established and enable public health to better track risks associated with public health over time. And indeed, Senator Ringo, as you were asking questions about cancers, it's going to take a number of years of the reporting data for us to be able to combine those data together of exposure and health outcome. But with your help, we can do this. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Are you an epidemiologist?
I am.
What does that mean?
An epidemiologist is one who tracks disease and illness and injury in a population, whereas a physician treats one patient at a time, an epidemiologist treats a population at a time. And a population can be workers who are working at a particular plant, people who are living in a particular community, or it can be all of the citizens of the state of Oregon. And indeed, that's who we are responsible for.
We just heard testimony that mentioned a variety of cancers, including brain cancer. Is there a proven link by epidemiologists between the application of pesticides and cancers like brain cancers?
In states that have better research dollars and better youth reporting data than we do, there are some studies that have suggested, for example, that agricultural growers in certain Midwestern states who are using certain pesticide products do have elevated risk for certain cancers, and likewise, family members who live on the agricultural premises where the products are being used are also at increased risk. So there's some epidemiologic data to suggest that.
I mean, if they've proven it in Minnesota, you can assume the same thing's true here, even if the study wasn't done here.
We don't necessarily use the same products that are used in Minnesota that we use here. The crops that we grow are different,
right.
And the pesticides that we use are oftentimes specific to the crop need, whether it's controlling an insect pest or a plant pest or some other disease.
Okay, and my understanding is that in the last 30 years, the incidence of cancer in society has risen dramatically.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, this isn't just because of pesticides. I assume it's a variety of toxics that finds its way into our bodies.
It's probably, we don't know the answer completely, but it's probably a combination of a variety of things. One would be genetic susceptibility. Another would be the exposure to the variety of products that we use in our home lives, in our work lives, and also the lifestyles that we choose to have. We know, for example, that a behavioral response to smoking tobacco products leads to an increase in a variety of cancers in the human body. We also know that exposures in the workplace to certain chemicals can also result in a dramatic increase in cancers among people who've been exposed to that. As a corollary, it's not unreasonable to assume, but we don't know for sure, that exposures in our daily lives, either through our diet or through our behavior or through the products that we use or that we're otherwise exposed to, that there could be some impact. Yes.
Well, is the link between pesticides and cancer, does that link apply to, say, the farm workers or the families who live on the farms, or does it also apply to people who consume those products, whether it's strawberries in the field that may not have been washed well enough?
Well, as Diane was talking about, some of the most critical exposures are considered to be those that happen to children before they're born, when they're in the early gestation mm-hmm. periods, where even a small amount of exposure are suspected to result in a much greater impact that may not show itself for several years, and in that sense, a very small exposure could have a large result. Likewise, you'll remember there was the scare about using Alar in apples because young children ate more apple products than did adults, and that the worry was that the dose that children were getting was much greater than that, the impact that it would have on adults.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Atkinson.
Thank you. Great testimony for both of you. I appreciate it. I went to graduate school and learned I'm not wired to be an accountant. I don't know how you go to school and figure out you're going to take care of an entire state. But
that, with a lot of help.
You have to be wired to do that. I think I'm interested in the connections of your testimony with cancer and those types of things. I believe that Americans eat bad, and they eat chemicals. I don't think there's anything natural in a pop, and there's certainly the preservatives in bread and chips and the things that Americans eat. I also think, forget the report, one of the most overweight regions in America is the Willamette Valley. I think we're consistently in the top three, or you people are consistently in the top three. I don't live here.
You live here now, buddy.
But just while you're here, is there a connection between fluoride and cancer?
That's another hearing.
No, it's the same issue, is it not? I mean, it's clean water, and you could argue that fluoride's a chemical.
Actually, fluoride, Senator Atkinson and Chair Ringo.
It's toxic right on the bag.
Fluoride is a basic element, a naturally occurring element, as opposed to a manufactured chemical. And at certain levels, most any element or most any product can be nutritious, or at other levels can be dangerous and downright lethal. If you're asking about fluoride at levels that would protect against dental caries, I think the epidemiology there has suggested pretty strongly that the likelihood of human health effects is very remote. If they've not demonstrated that, it's really not a link. I think some of the other questions might be whether there's associated with any animal toxicity.
Thank you. Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I'm curious. I don't think that Director Coble actually ever said that the agency opposes the bill, but her written testimony says the agency has confirmed that the changes proposed in the bill. And maybe she said, I've opposed this bill, or we oppose this bill. I'm not sure, but I'm curious to know how one agency can come in and support a bill, and another agency is going to come in with concerns, at least, and maybe outright opposition. I said I don't remember that, but I'm going off a written testimony.
That's a very good question, Senator Beyer and Chair Ringo. Certainly the Department of Human Services, along with the Department of Agriculture, supports House Bill 2152, which the Department of Agriculture did come out and state that they fully support as well. I think is reflected in the testimony here today that the Department of Human Services has come out in strong support of a pesticide use reporting system for the public health reasons that I have mentioned. You'll notice that in my testimony I did not address the cost issues at all, because they're not part of the governor's budget. Does that help?
Yeah, that's just good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would
Trump,
like
you had
to,
one more.
Yeah, just, you know, it took us, it was 35 years after the Surgeon General said that smoking was harmful that we really knew how and why. And the problem with a lot of the pesticides is that they are ubiquitous. We have no control group. It is a great uncontrolled experiment. I know many people with cancer who have eaten very well, who have not eaten junk food, who are not overweight. And there are studies on laboratory mammals that show some of these chemicals are carcinogenic. You can go to federal government websites and find that after going through a strict political process that some of these chemicals are labeled carcinogenic. We can see worker exposures where epidemiologically the incidence has gone up. We do not have control groups for the general population because it is also ubiquitous. And I take you back to my example of DDT. What if the effects of DDT had been subtle, delayed, and hard to measure? That is where we are at. You're correct. It's not just pesticides. It's also fire retardants. There are a number of chemicals that we just don't know what's happening. I work with disabled children. I work with pregnant mothers. I'm very concerned about these issues. We want better science.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to work on that fire retardant. That's over in the Health Committee,
Thank
though.
Thank you.
They thought if it was in this committee, it would seem too enviro. See, on a health issue, it'll pass easier. So, let's bring up, there's two folks from more than 100 miles I want to make sure come up right now. One is Camille Hukin.
Hikari,
I'm sorry. I don't pretend to be able to read this. And the other is Tulsi Wallace. And I need to step out for a minute, so I'm going to pass the gavel to Senator Beyer. You can pass the bill, too, if you want.
Can I close it? Table it permanently? Thanks, Neil.
Look at this nice audience we got here. Senator Beyer, are you taking over? Is that correct?
I've got the hammer.
Okay. Great. Well, Senator Beyer and remaining members of the committee, my name is Tulsi Wallace. I'm here to represent Eugene Water and Electric Board, also known as EWEB, out of Eugene, Oregon. And I work in the Drinking Source Protection Program, and this statement is in support of passing Bill 290 to fund the pesticide use reporting law, and specifically reporting by section township range as opposed to vaguely by watershed. And I want to get into that a little bit more later since it seems to be a topic that hasn't been covered that in that greater detail, and also the elimination of the law's 2009 sunset. Passing of Senate Bill 290 will help protect drinking water. And I want to give you an example. The Mackenzie River is the sole source of drinking water for 200,000 people in the Eugene and surrounding communities. And that number is growing. In our risk assessment for EWEB's drinking source protection, pesticides were identified among potential threats, and specifically I want to talk about agriculture, but just as an example. In the Mackenzie watershed, most of the agricultural land sits in the bottom of the valley at close proximity to the river, and there's a couple maps in your packet to illustrate that. Studies have shown that pesticides and nutrients occur more frequently and at higher concentrations at water monitoring sites located in agricultural areas. Of particular concern to UWEB's drinking water are dissolved organic chemicals, such as pesticides. It's just another word for pesticides. UWEB's filtration plant is designed to filter bacteria, metals, nutrient sediment, organic matter. However, we cannot treat for dissolved organic chemicals or pesticides using active carbon unless we know they exist, such as in spills or in periods of odor or taste problems. I want to give an example of a commonly used agricultural pesticide that has shown up in trace amounts at our intake, diazinon. There are known health effects associated with diazinon, including increased risk of brain cancer in children, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer, and birth defects. Those are all referenced in there. You can see where I got those number or those examples. So the pesticide use reporting law and its implementation based on the passage of this Senate bill is critical in allowing us to track agricultural pesticide use and to cross-reference that with the work that we do with water monitoring. Our ability to track and monitor the use of pesticides in the watershed through the implementation of this law, and specifically the reporting law as it relates to having it with a section township range, is vital to our ability to provide safe drinking water for our growing number of customers. And we believe that having this reporting law activated indefinitely, of course, we understand that there may be need for review, but we do believe that it needs to continue, is a critical piece for us to provide the safe drinking water. And I want to go back really quickly and talk about...
Just to be quick. We've got 20 minutes left and a bunch of people.
Well, I want to talk about the section township range. One of the things I do in my job description is I work with a system called GIS, Graphical Information Systems, and we map agricultural activity, or we're trying to map agricultural activity. This bill is going to be very important. That we map forestry activity and other activities. And those are databases that I know a lot of different government agencies are trying to get on board with GIS so that there can be sharing of information. And in my work with that, I know how important it is that information is specific. Anything reported on a watershed level just would not be useful for scientific data. Data, when it's vague, isn't useful.
You have 20 more seconds.
Okay. I just wanted to address that because I felt like the section township range is very important in the passing of this bill.
Okay. Thank you very
Great.
Much.
Thank
Ms.
you very
Karin?
Much.
Chair Ringo, Senator Beyer, and Shields. My name is Camille Hukari. I'm from Hood River, Oregon. I'm a fourth-generation orchardist. I grow pears and apples on 43 acres and have 18 acres of hay.
Sounds like a Measure 37 claim coming.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Ahead.
In addition, today I wish to speak for the Hood River Grower Shipper Association. It's a local industry association representing about 350 growers in the Mid-Columbia area. And we would like to go on record as not supporting Senate Bill 290, and there's several reasons for that. One is this issue of reporting location. And just to make it brief, we supported in the previous bill the watershed idea. And the reason for that is the conflict with confidentiality. We are very concerned about township range and section because there are producers and forestry owners who own entire sections of land. And you cannot maintain the confidentiality of the person reporting if it includes a section. So, second, I just want to, as a person who has tried to use the system prior to it being disbanded, one, just a few comments. It was not user-friendly, and I found I could not make corrections to the information once I put it in the system. Second, the system as is does not recognize that as an agriculture producer, I am under federal law to report my use of restricted use chemicals. In addition, as an orchardist and a person who provides food products, I have records of all my chemical applications, and they're not consistent. So it requires two, right now, even under the system as is, requires two separate reporting programs for me, which I would really like to see them combined so that they are consistent. Second, the notion of requiring reporting of pesticide sales and distribution, which is new in Senate Bill 290, that will, in my opinion, is excessive and will result in higher costs, as will the registration of the products result in higher costs. And that cost, I would like you to remember that a higher registration cost is a cost that will be borne by the user of the product, which is myself. It is not the rich chemical company who will be paying that cost. It is the person who purchased it, which is me. I cannot stress enough that as a producer of a raw agricultural product, I am not able to raise my return to pay for increased regulatory or operating costs. Additional costs come directly out of my profit, if there are any. And since my farm has suffered losses since 1996, these costs, higher costs, are less than welcome. Second, I think Terry mentioned it, if a program is for the public good, the public should assist in paying for it. And finally, we do have House Bill 2152 on the other side, which has fewer problems, in our opinion, than Senate Bill 290. I just want to remind everyone that there is another alternative. We are not saying throw out the PERS system. We understand the information is important. We also think it will show probably less use than some people might suggest. With that, I thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hikari. Just to comment, for me, you raised some technical issues in terms of the difficulty of processing it, and I think that those ought to be solvable. We ought to find ways to be able to address those, but still make the program work.
Confidentiality is huge for us.
Well,
it is something you cannot ignore.
Ms. Hikari, I appreciate that. I also, though, listen to people who say we have to have more specificity, and we're trying to figure out what causes cancer. And if we're talking about birth defects and cancers and lymphomas, I think if it's going to take more information to really get to that, then we've got to have that information. And the question is how to provide assurance to people like you that eco-terrorists will never get their hands on this information. I think the confidentiality protections are there, but you need that assurance.
Yes, I do.
I understand that. Thank you, committee. Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I've got a question for Tulsi.
You got it?
Huh?
Yes.
You handed out some graphs, charts dealing with pesticide uses in the... I'm trying to figure out where they come from. I see it's estimated nominal rate of application of insecticides, and the other one is something else, herbicides.
Yep.
I've never heard of these before. I'm kind of curious where they get their data and who is doing estimating on what's being used.
This, Senator Beyer, this was a study that was done by USGS, and it was a compilation of information that they put together to begin to look at what are the different chemicals that go into crops, because the information is not available. The information that would be available if Senate Bill 290 was passed, this is a bit of information that we use when we crop type up in the river, and I thought it was useful just to show the different chemicals that are used for different crops and how many chemicals are used. That's why I included it. It's something that we have included in our agricultural activity assessment and evaluation plan. And so I chose to put it in there. I'm sorry, your question about how they got the information,
this, I can't tell you. I just know that it was a study that was put out by USGS, and the cover tells you.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Let's see. We have Bob Detweiler. Are you here? Do you want to come forward, please? And Robert Reynolds. We're starting to match the pro and con at the same table here. I hope that works okay. Go ahead, Mr. Detweiler.
Thank you, Chair Ringo and commissioners. I'm Bob Detweiler. I'm a row crop grass seed farmer from the Silverton area. And I just had a few quick points I wanted to bring out here, and one of them that I wasn't planning on speaking on, but as I sat here this afternoon, so many of them brought up the point about cancer and the diseases and everything, and they made it sound like everyone in here is opposed to the pesticide use reporting program, and that I never heard that. That wasn't the case. I thought we were here talking about the Senate Bill 290 and how what's in that that pertains to all of us, and so. If you want to talk about all these,
let me ask a question, and maybe it will guide you. You said you're opposed to Senate Bill 290, probably because you don't want to be paying for all the program. You want the general fund to help pay for it.
Right.
I mean, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that the reason you oppose it?
One of the reasons, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
And the other reasons?
Well, the I think that this program was set up because of a lot of the reason was because of the public wanting it, and so I think the way it was originally set up with 50% being funded from general fund, it should still be that way because it isn't fair to put all the cost on it. Actually goes back to the user, like our previous speaker said here, as a farmer or as a chemical company, or if they have to increase the registration fees, the cost will be passed on to the user, which is us. And as a farmer, we don't set prices. We take whatever is given to us, and we're probably the only industry in the world that buys all our input costs at retail price, sells our product at wholesale, and pays the freight both ways, on both ends. So we don't have any control of these costs that are passed on to us, and they continue to go up. We're having the fuel prices are skyrocketing, so that makes chemical prices, fertilizer, everything go up. So we are having a tough time surviving. So,
Mr. Detweiler, just to comment, I don't blame you one bit. I think that one of the reasons for the bill is because last session the lobbyists for the pesticide industry succeeded in killing the funding for the program. So I think this is the idea is that if you don't want to fund it from the general fund, then maybe the users should do it. If the users aren't going to be part of it, then it's going to be the general fund. And I'm happy to advocate for that, and I think the people who support pesticide use reporting are just fine with that.
Okay, and then another point that I want to bring out is the reporting requirement. But I'd like to see it as from a watershed area, because the reporting is going to be a nightmare if we've got to go township, range, and section, because when we apply chemicals, we may do 10 different fields in one day, and they're all in different sections, townships, and we don't even know what they are. We'd have to go for our legal descriptions to get these, and so it'd be a lot easier and a lot more economical to do it on a township or on a watershed basis.
And I have a question for you on that one. The fields that you, and Senator Beyer could answer this because he's an ag and I'm not, but the fields that you're applying to, they don't have physical addresses. I mean, there's tax lot numbers. No. Is there an easier way for you to identify them rather than going to township, section, range? But
not that I know of. I mean, we as farmers have certain names for certain fields. I mean, if a farm belongs to someone, that's the name we use or whatever.
Yeah.
But no address or anything necessarily that goes with it.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
And then the other point would be the sunset clause. I don't think we should eliminate that because it was put in the original bill to give us something to fall back on if after so many years we can look at it and see if it's working, and if it is, we'll have it continue. Otherwise, it could be done away with. So that's basically all I had to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Cutwiler, committee. Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Reynolds.
I'm Bob Reynolds. I'm the president of the Molalla River Improvement District. We're a taxing authority. We're a volunteer organization, however, run by volunteers. I just like to speak. One of our battle cries is to be able to walk back on the backs of the salmon across the river, as it was 50 years ago, 100 years ago. So that's our battle cry. And we've heard of those with water districts having a problem with water, those that with cancer and such. Ours is a pretty simple test. If the salmon, it's kind of like a canary in the mine. If a salmon can live there, it's probably pretty good. Except we did hear from the Indian Reservation here that there are some bad things in there. The two things that I like to address too is trying to identify on the pesticides and the herbicides. However you can do it, it's fine. But the problem we have on it, it's a very costly situation if you don't know where the source of the problem is. The Molalla River, which we take care of, is all the way to the Estacada Molalla Bridge, all the way down past Knight's Bridge. We'd like to know what pesticides, what herbicides are going into the streams and the farms there, because it becomes simple and cheaper to make tests versus not knowing what 50 different chemicals there are out there. So to be able to identify the farmer as well as the farm is certainly our way of doing it. We'd like to know what chemicals are they using. The second is some way of recording of either. I can pinpoint and I can find situations on the map when I have a township range and section area. I can, if I know what chemicals go in there, I have to make a simple little test to know whether or not it's above the standard. If we don't know, then it's 50 different chemical tests you have to make, and it's very, very, very expensive.
You know, you both seem like reasonable people. I bet if we got all the lobbyists out of this, you guys together could agree on what to do.
We could work it out.
You want to try to do that?
Sure.
Okay, committee. Okay, thank you very much.
You're
welcome. That's fine. Rhett Lawrence and Randy Tucker, please. What do you think, Roger?
Chair Ringo, members of the committee, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm an environmental advocate with OSCOR, the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. Just here today to urge you to support Senate Bill 290. I'll be very brief. You've got my written testimony coming around now, and most of my points have already been covered by someone else. I mean, you've heard the reasons we need this program: drinking water, public health issues, you know, potential impacts on salmon, the right to know what's being used in our community. So all these things. And so we just believe that Senate Bill 290 is a good way to get us, you know, down that road towards having an operational pesticide use reporting system in the state, and so we certainly urge you to support it.
Okay, thanks. You very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Randy Tucker. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, and I'll also be brief. The Metro Council supports Senate Bill 290 in order to implement the Oregon's pesticide use reporting system. We have basically two categories of interest implementing the pesticide use reporting system. The first is that Metro is charged with many responsibilities to protect water quality and protect fish and wildlife habitat and manage stormwater under federal and state requirements. And those responsibilities, our ability to discharge those responsibilities, will be greatly enhanced by information resulting from a comprehensive pesticide use reporting system in our region, in the urban area. And we're also involved in an extensive effort to educate citizens of the region about the risks posed by pesticides and the availability of alternatives. And so it would be helpful to us to know what's being used where, in some general sense at least, in order to target those kinds of programs. The other category, or the other area of interest, is our responsibilities with respect to solid waste. We manage the regional solid waste system for the Portland metropolitan area, and that includes the operation of two large transfer stations, which include hazardous waste collection and disposal areas. And according to my experts in solid waste, the disposal of pesticides is the most expensive waste stream we handle, because many of the other things that we collect can be reused or burned or in order to recover energy or somehow disposed of. But with pesticides, that's not the case. They have to go to a hazardous waste landfill, and it's an expensive proposition for us. And pesticide use data would, again, help us to target programs to minimize the excess pesticides that we end up collecting. We would, even though Metro's jurisdictional boundary is largely confined to the urban parts of the Portland metropolitan area, our waste shed is larger than that, so we're interested in use data. In other words, the area from which we collect these kinds of materials is larger than just our jurisdictional boundary, so obviously we'd be interested in data that is from an area larger than just our jurisdiction. Obviously, you're not thinking about doing just a metro area pesticide use reporting system anyway. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, committee. All right. Thank you very much. That concludes it, unless anybody else in the audience wants to pitch in their 2 cents. You got 30 seconds. Okay. Thank you very much. That closes the hearing on Senate.